Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate. Now listen to this.
Nico Wednesday, and I need to hear my own kind sing. On the air and riff-roo with me is 646-478-4847. That's 646-478-4847. That said, let me just welcome you to the program. Eve of April Fool's Day as it is, and there are a lot of jackasses out in the news. So let's start with a little drill, baby, drill. You know, I try to avoid the political stuff. Who needs this on a Wednesday night, 9 o'clock, some idiot, you know, going on about the politics out there? But the thing is, I'm more interested in how this message that comes out of Washington, D.C., bounces off all the satellites down to your iPhones, and the president, who is now, you know, just picking the shards of glass out of his body from the health care bill, you know, from the right, from the left, they're coming at him all sides, comes out last night with this little statement of, we're going to, you know, open up some offshore drilling here. And, of course, the flip-flop mentality that is the Beltway, you know, ran with this. And it's so funny to watch the dyslexia that goes on both sides, because there is no R&D out there, not R&D like you would think about, like, you know, research and development, but Republican, Democrat, that really has... You know, there's not just two sides to the argument. It's very, very, very nuanced, as they say. So I found a little mashup of this that I will let's listen in here and just see. Let's see. Follow the bouncing Obama here. March 31st, 2010. He says,
"We're going to talk about America's energy security as we transition to cleaner energy sources. We still got to make some tough decisions about" opening new offshore areas for oil and gas development in ways that protect communities and protect coastlines. So today we're announcing the expansion of offshore oil and gas exploration.
Okay, now a flashback, 2008.
Let me make it very clear. Drill, baby, drill, and drill now. Drill, baby, drill?
The chant is drill, baby, drill.
Drill, baby, drill, baby, drill.
Drill new wells offshore, and we'll drill them now.
I'm
understand how badly.
June 20th, 2008.
Well over $4 a gallon in many places. But what wouldn't do a thing to lower gas prices is John McCain's new proposal, proposal adopted by George Bush as well, to open up Florida's coastline to offshore drilling. Senator McCain once had a different position on offshore drilling, and it's clear why he did. It would have long-term consequences for our coastline, but no short-term benefits, because it would take at least 10 years to get any oil. Let me just repeat. John McCain's proposal, George Bush's proposal to drill offshore, would not divide families with any relief. This year, next year, 5 years. Now, the latest scheme is, well, we're going to drill offshore. Now, I want to be absolutely clear to everybody about this. If I thought that I could provide you some immediate relief on gas prices by drilling off the shores of California and New Jersey, and believe me, if I thought there was any evidence at all that drilling could save people money who are struggling to fill up their gas tanks by this summer or this year or even the next few years, if I thought by drilling offshore we could solve our problem, I'd do it. I would consider it. But it won't. This is a proposal that will only worsen our addiction to oil and put off needed investments in clean, renewable energy. When I'm president, I intend to keep in place the moratorium here in Florida and around the country that prevents oil companies from drilling off Florida's coast.
With gas prices soaring, Barack Obama says no to offshore drilling.
Back to now.
What I hope is the policies that we've laid out, from hybrid fleets to offshore drilling, underscores the seriousness with which my administration takes this challenge. It's a challenge that requires us to break out of the old ways of thinking. I think that we can break out of the broken politics of the past when it comes to our energy policy.
Hey, you guys are ready to break out!
Woo! All right, so there you have it. Rudy Giuliani sending us off to drill, baby, drill. Holy merd. All right, well, that only leaves us one choice. We have to pull up our pagan pal, Professor Val, to put this in perspective and other things as she joins us here on this April Fool's Eve. Hello, Eco.
Hello, Eco.
Now, you heard all that mash up there, and it's funny because the poor Exo doesn't know no better.
Yeah.
He don't know no better.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to make a lucid argument to a bunch of lunatics who only will hear one side of the story no matter what way you tell it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Which segues to the link you sent me before, the history of April Fool's Day, which is I got to just read this quick. All right, this is just too funny. The history of April Fool's Day, or All Fool's Day, is uncertain, but the current thinking is that it began around 1582 in France, where they have nuclear energy, with the reform of the calendar under Charles IX. The Gregorian calendar was introduced, and New Year's Day was moved from March 25th to April 1st, New Year's week to January 1st. That makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Communication traveled slow in those confused days. Some people were only informed of the change several years later, because when you go out on New Year's Eve, you kind of act like a jackass, right? So they switched the day, and they didn't tell anybody. Still others who were more rebellious refused to acknowledge the change and continued to celebrate the last day of the former celebration, April 1st. See, a bunch of stubborn, you know, Frenchies that wouldn't move the New Year's Eve celebration, right?
Bunch of Antos.
Yeah, but it makes sense to start your year in the spring.
Right.
This gets into the pagan element in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm figuring out here. These people were labeled fools by the general populace, were subject to ridicule and sent on fool's errands, like maybe chiropractic college.
You're such an ass.
I don't know there, Wilbur. Sent invitations to non-existent parties and other practical jokes. The butt of these pranks became known as Poison d'Avril, or April Fish, because the young, naive fish is easily caught. In addition, one common practice was to hook a paper fish on the back of someone as a joke.
Yeah,
the harassment evolved over time, and a custom of prank playing continues to the first day of April. Tradition eventually spread to Britain and Scotland in the 18th century, introduced to the American colonies by the English and the French. Because of this spread to other countries, April Fool's Day has taken on an international flavor, with each country celebrating the holiday its own way. Now, this is where I think, this is where the pagan ethos kind of starts to get its little Jacksons up here.
Uh-huh.
In Scotland, for instance, April Fool's Day is devoted to spoofs involving the buttocks, and is called Tally Day. The butts of these jokes are known as April Gawk, another name for a cuckoo bird. The origins of the kick me sign can be traced to the Scottish. Thank them for that.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that the commercial with the something with, he whips the guy in the ass.
Yeah.
The Scottish guy.
Yeah.
That's using your thing, Jimmy, and he hits him.
Yeah, that's the Starburst commercial.
Right. He hits him in the ass. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Tally Day. All right, that's Scotland. In England, the jokes are played only in the morning. Freaking Brits. Fools are called gobs or gobby, and the victim of the joke is called a noodle. It was considered bad luck to play practical jokes on someone afternoon. Again, England. In Rome, the holiday is known as the Festival of Hilaria. I am definitely putting a tweet out about that tomorrow. The Festival of Hilaria. Celebrating, it must be a day that I pay rent, April 1st. That's the landlord celebrate. Hey, look, I got a check from Philippi. It's the Festival of Hilaria. Celebrating the resurrection of the god Attis is on March 25th and also referred to as Roman Laughing Day. All right. Meanwhile, in Portugal, April Fool's Day falls on the Sunday and Monday before Lent. In this celebration, many people throw flour at their friends. So if you're in Portugal tomorrow, keep your head down. And finally, in India, the Holi Festival is celebrated today, March 31st. People play jokes on each other and smear colors on one another, celebrating the arrival of spring. So this gets into this thing we're going to talk about here in a minute, about how the pagans are everywhere. No matter what they do, they can't bury it. So no matter what you happen to be in the world on April 1st, don't be surprised if there's a fool played on you. All right, so there you go. That's the April Fool's Day.
I have something to add to that. Do you know who Attis was?
No.
He was he was a god, vegetation god or something like that. He was forced by the goddess to castrate himself as punishment for his, that's right, infidelity.
Really?
Yes, so they're celebrating the self-castration.
Wait a minute, say this whole thing again, because I'm distracted here.
You're always distracted.
Yeah, Attis is the god of what?
Vegetation.
And so to celebrate, he did himself?
He had some goddess as a, booty call.
A little side dish, yeah.
Uh-huh. And he was forced by the goddess to castrate himself as a punishment for his infidelity.
Why would a god have to castrate himself? What kind of racket is this?
Well, I don't know, but
a god can't have a gumad? Is there a cosmic law against this now?
Yes. Initiates into this priesthood of, I forget what it was called, they reenact the myth with their self-castration.
Oh, no. That was April Fool's Day to cut your balls off?
It's every day for most of us.
You filthy criminals.
Hence the marriage laws. Wow.
Right. Well, there you go. That's what happened to Attis.
Jeez, no wonder he's not a popular god.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The mm-hmm. god of the self-deballed. Hmm. Now, segueing that into our Easter celebration, because we did talk about this back in March around the time of the solstice there a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
A lot of pagan holidays all bunched together here in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we know a little bit about April Fool's Day and poor Attis over there, who apparently had a bad lawyer. What is it about April that everyone associates April with the spring because of the Easter thing, right, with
mm-hmm.
the eggs? We talked about that last time. That came
from the bunnies.
Pagans.
Mm-hmm.
And the bunnies came from the pagans as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, segue this into our second story tonight after we got through with Drill Baby Drill over there. I got almost Sarah Palin news after this, but the Pope versus the press. All right, now, if you guys are familiar, the Catholic Church sex abuse scandal has passed the media tipping point. There's 42% of TV nightly news coverage is devoted to the Pope and the Church. How about them apples?
Oh, that would be probably one of the main reasons I don't watch any of the broadcast news.
But this is, could you imagine, over the past 3 years, now think about what's happened in the past 3 years. 42% of the nightly news is covered, is devoted to the Pope and the Church.
Uh-huh.
That's out of hand.
Oh,
I read that stat before, and I said to myself, there's something nuts there that I just don't understand.
Well, you're not surprised, are you?
No.
What the fuck was he talking about?
Where's that from? That's a good one.
That's from Dewey Cox, of course. That's the Elvis thing.
Oh, yeah. All right.
There you go.
There it is. Ringing the bell. Ding.
Yeah. So you get all these accusations against Pope Benedict. He's the Archbishop of Munich and all this thing with the U.S. priest back in, I guess it was the late 50s, molesting 200 deaf kids in Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah, that bastard, yeah.
Yeah. Now, this Pope didn't know about it until the 90s, and, you know, he kind of looked the other way, and the guy was dying. He wanted to be forgiven. You know.
Right.
But the thing is that it doesn't even matter. I mean, that story aside, just that stat, 42% of our 600 stories a day on the web about the damn Pope and the damn church.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that blows my mind. And they said these stories have a short shelf life. The sex abuse story, however, began nearly a decade ago. No other story has drawn so much negative coverage in this arc of time. I mean, because, again, if you start mixing sex with Catholics, you're going to get fire.
Mm-hmm.
Fire. Da, 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 and it's going to be over. So again, as a card-carrying pagan, when you look at the relative foobar of the Catholic Church from a pagan perspective, and even going in slightly even more woo to the Wiccan, who what was it, a year or two ago, were allowed to actually put their symbol on their tombstones,
finally,
God save
right.
the Queen,
right?
Yeah. What it's so just paradoxical to me that the Catholics always feel oppressed.
Well,
no matter
where
you turn, they always feel like everyone's out to get them. And look what they do.
The masses of followers are probably pretty... Well, the church spent all those years oppressing their own people, their own followers. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
While the Pope and all his pals up there are dripping in gold, they're begging all the poor people that they sucker in to give them more money. I don't get it.
It sounds like the Republican the party. Didn't tell you the truth.
It sounds like organized crime.
Yeah, we talked about that before. What is the difference between, you know, what's the Italian word? Cosa Nostra, right?
Yep.
The difference between the organized crime, Soprano style, and the current way that the Catholic Church is both marketed and protected and insulated by almost every government, you know, the antitrust stuff, well, the money part. I'm not talking about the religion part. The business of being the Catholic Church.
Right, right. We are not putting down any Catholics or Protestants or Jews or Hindus or whatever. We are talking about the structure itself,
the
vile and disgusting structure. Well, let's look at a definition of organized crime. Widespread criminal activities that occur within a centrally controlled formal structure. Let's see.
Gee.
What criminal activities can we name?
I got four.
Diarrhea, constipation, gas, bloating, that's me.
There's my crimes. but seriously, you can go there.
Give that man a cork.
Yeah, well, hello. As I nurse my Arizona sweet tea, Southern style.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at the Catholic Church as a, you know, basically a spittoon Catholic in my late teens, go forth and sin some more is what I thought I heard them say. And the absolute phoniness of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one part of that whole deal that doesn't look like a puppet show to me now. But
no.
Growing up, it was the end-all, be-all.
Mm, well,
it had a profound influence over me until I was about 15, and I went...
Yeah, but your mother is much more religious.
We'll bring up the Fyro here. Why not? We're already moving on Easter Sunday, going straight to freaking hell.
She is, you know, she definitely is a follower, and she knows her stuff when it comes to that.
But that's the difference. There's a difference between someone that practices the faith in their life and someone that uses the religion as a political tool or as a corporate thing to basically sucker a lot of people into things that they normally wouldn't do. That's the part I look at the church, and because there's Catholic Charities, there's a whole bunch of stuff that, and again, you can't paint it with a big broad brush, but when you look at 42% of the freaking news is Catholic today, and then they go, we're oppressed, It's like the right wing saying, we have no media outlet. Are you nuts?
I know.
That's the part that gets me. It's like fair is foul, foul is fair.
Well,
and it's too much for me to take anymore.
King Kong ain't got shit on me!
There you go. That's the Pope chiming in.
Nice. You know that they're trying to go after the Pope to be responsible for all of the pedophile priests and so on.
Right.
Even our government or local governments, I guess, depends wherever this happens, state, they're actually trying to go after the Pope and the Pope's legal team is putting together a defense, which starts with he is absolutely immune from ever being prosecuted because he's their commander-in-chief.
Right.
So that's what they're starting with.
It gets sillier and sillier to me, because why would we give him that type of protection unless there was a corporate connection there, which
uh-huh.
is what happened. Wall Street did it. Hey, the damn senators did it last week. They exempt themselves from the health care bill that they passed.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how you trust a leader these days. I don't know how you even try. What's the point? What's the payoff? They're only going to screw you over anyway, it seems. And laugh, laugh, laugh while they do it.
Yeah, we're not laughing, though.
So, as a pagan, how do you approach the egg thing this weekend?
Well, I will be cooking for my family the traditional secular bunny rabbit Christmas Easter thing.
Yes, everyone get their phyllo bunnies.
Right, but Ostara was a while back.
That was back when
ago.
We had the season change, yeah.
Yeah, so that's when we celebrate.
Now, how is it that, again, this is one of those tricky questions. If Easter means season change, and we just said April 1st used to be basically January 1st, New Year's Day,
uh-huh.
right? Would you look at Easter as being the start of your pagan year?
No. No.
So it's back is it back?
It's actually Samhain, Halloween.
Ooh.
Halloween
starts the year?
Yeah.
So you start in the dark?
That's our new year. That's when all the seeds are planted that we now celebrate. So that is the new year.
Seeds are planted in Halloween when the ground is like a rock?
Hmm. The death of the trees and the flowers going into the ground.
Yeah.
Now they're coming up. So
right.
we actually celebrate the death and, that's right, resurrection.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Of the plants and so on. So we celebrate it then.
Hmm.
And then we celebrate always, we're always celebrating the earth and the fertility. Every one of the holidays is pretty much about that.
Yeah, well, that's what we've been going along with you. That's why we pull you up on these holiday weekends, because it makes sense to look at it from, you know, a somatic standpoint, that there's a reflection in the surroundings, as we talk about on the coherence calendar on summerspace.org.
Right. But now, don't forget that if we have Samhain here on the other side of the world, they're celebrating the opposite holiday.
Yeah. We don't worry about them. South America, you're right. Take it away, South America! Leave it to Bugs Bunny for them. They're figure it out for yourself. I mean, we got Michael Steele going to topless bars. We got enough problems on this side of the freaking equator, right? Speaking of which, you'll like this little tidbit as we wind down here. And a number again to jump in. And the chat room's open. Number again to call is
646-478-4847.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it shocked me, and somebody actually called the number. I mean, really.
I called
someone calls in. Well, once in a while, Montefiore will call in and say hi, but, you know.
He is a character, though.
Well, you know. We
from the old hood.
Leave him down. He doesn't like to be known. You know, we keep it out of there. Federal judge rules Bush program illegally wiretapped Americans. This just in. In a repudiation, talk about resurrection, of the Bush administration's now defunct terrorist surveillance effort, a federal judge ruled Wednesday that government investigators illegally wiretapped the phone conversations of an Islamic charity and two American lawyers without a search warrant. Dun, dun, dun. 45-page ruling from Judge Vaughn Walker, who sounds like he might be a black man. I don't know. Just profiling from here. maybe not. By virtue of fighting what the Bush administration did to our clients was illegal, we found that the terrorist surveillance program was unlawful. President Bush authorized a surveillance program shortly after 9/11, allowing NSA officials to bypass the courts, intercept electronic communications, remember the old email thing, and believed connected to Al-Qaeda. He thought everything was connected to Al-Qaeda.
Uh-huh.
And he couldn't get his head out of his ass with two hands, but that's another story. Generally, government investigators are required to obtain search warrants. At issue Wednesday was a 2006 lawsuit in Oregon, and they argued the wiretaps installed without a judge's authorizations are illegal. So the ruling ends the case, but without fireworks, it ends with a whimper. So basically, they won the case, and they can't do anything about it because Obama's already said, you know, whitewashed the whole thing. So there you go, Kazette. But basically, another one of these things where, just like the church, like I said before, where if you're in the loop and if you're in the Cosa Nostra, then nothing happens to you. You know,
right.
You take care. We took care of it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody called somebody. Took care of it, you know. Tony hung
right.
up the phone, went back to went back inside the bada bing, and away they go.
Yeah, but you know, the church itself isn't the only one that benefits. Even the secular community benefits from the large following of the Catholic Church. Let me give you an example.
Right
when Lent starts, and for those of you that don't know what that means, 40 days before Easter, people give things up. You know, I'm not going to curse during Lent, or I'm going to whatever the hell they decide to do. One of the things that happens is you're not supposed to eat meat on Fridays. Naturally, McDonald's panics when this happens. So every single Lent, you will see a commercial come on the TV, and it will play through Easter. And I'm just going to play it for you here. I bet you guys have heard this one.
Give me that fish.
There you go.
Give me that devil fish. Give me that fish. What if it were you hanging up on this wall? If it were you in that sandwich, you wouldn't be laughing at all.
So, okay, so they push the Filet-O-Fish so that they don't lose any business. Now, there was a news article that made me pee myself at work today because, of course, I was playing the Filet-O-Fish at work.
Uh-huh.
And I forgot what state it was, but some idiot was going through the drive-thru at 4:30 in the morning, and they were taking a little bit too much time at the McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
So the dumbass.
I was busy reading. What? Okay.
He crawled through the window.
Yeah.
He punched the worker at McDonald's.
Uh-huh.
He grabbed a fillet of fish and walked out the front door.
Give me that fish.
Yeah. That's what he did. Let me see what the hell state it was. I was dying. I'm like, what's wrong with these people?
You know,
isn't that beautiful?
Well, world be free. That's all I can tell you there.
Yeah.
Give me that fish. He heard the song. And
he
there
heard
you go.
The song. The guy was taking too long. He decided to help himself. He crawled through the freaking window.
I think that's basically good advertising.
I think it was very effective. And,
yeah.
You know, every year people look forward to seeing what's it going to be like. This year it's always the same song, but they
mm-hmm.
do, like, a little bit of a different scene there. It's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. And then they could go play this one.
Diarrhea, constipation, gas, bloating, that's me.
There you go. That's on the way out of the McDonald's.
That's right.
Oh, boy.
Yep, so there you go. And, again...
All right.
We are not busting anyone's chops that follow any particular religion, but we are looking at the illness, the vile nature of the structures themselves of all organized religion. We're picking on one particular one because we happen to know a lot about that. Why do we know a lot about that one? Because it's in the news how often?
42% of the story, 600 a day on the web.
All right,
so
that's why
we're
picking on them.
And we could whittle down our Ten Commandments to two, and we'll have Elvis provide them.
There's two things you need to know. I'm the king, and number two is, look out, man!
And there it is, another
that's
eco.
Those are the two commandments. All right, you're off, you're free. Enjoy your gabardelles and whatever you're going to eat on Sunday. I'll enjoy my agita and my trip up in down 684.
New Jersey, my sister just... Thank you, Michelle. Yes, Michelle chimed in. It was New Jersey.
What was New Jersey?
Where the fillet of fish assault took place.
Oh, the fillet. Well, come on. Now the joke even gets funnier. New Jersey. Please.
All right. Well, you have a lovely evening, and I will speak
all right.
to you.
We will see you in the ethos when there's another pagan ritual that we need
to
educate people about.
Shalom, baby.
Shalom, and goodbye, Eco.
Bye.
All right. There she goes, our Pagan Pal, Professor Val, calling in. All right, well, chat room's open. We got a guest in there. Any questions you want? We're going to be now switching gears completely because I was lucky enough last night in my panic, which I go through every week for you people, to find a guest to come on the show to explain the way that the landscape of public relations has changed over the last 4 or 5 years in the era of social media. And I was just cruising around on the web trying to find somebody to replace somebody else, who I might mention before the show's over, that I thought would be a slam dunk to come on the show. And it was a slam dunk, all right, right in yours truly's face. But I did find somebody that, and again, sometimes life takes you strange directions. And her name is Kristen Cruz. She works for the Jennifer Barbie PR outfit, which is based out in Corpus Christi, Texas, and she's in the New York offices here. And you can catch her website over there at JenniferBarbie, BARBEE.com/Kristen. Name's Kristen Cruz, and we talked earlier this afternoon before she headed north, and here is the interview here for about half an hour. We will be back at top of the hour to show up a couple of the stories we have, and maybe we'll be joined by some other people we might know. All right, so here's me and Kristen earlier today. Okay, and here we are in virtual space here with our groundling. Standing by for, in North Carolina, and we are joined by Kristen Cruz. So I'm you know, this is some of the things where, welcome to the program, by the way.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Believe me, this is one of those mutual beneficial things today. now I'm new to the Hollywood world indirectly through clients and stuff, but I definitely want to get your behind the scenes take on some of these things because. I guess it's from the outside looking in, it looks extremely phony. If you go across the spectrum from someone that does public relations to someone who's an agent to someone who's somebody's manager to someone who's someone's publicist, and mm-hmm. the constant, you know, those layers overlap, and some people have more than one hat. But if your job is to basically put an image out there, whether it's an idea or an individual. Or to handle a scandal like what's been going on lately around the world, what is it that you see as your role, especially as it relates to sort of being the quickest gun in the West? Because we live in the TMZ culture now; everybody's got a faster phone, a faster mouth than the other person. How do you kind of navigate that river?
Well, you know, I think what it is right now we're living in an instant gratification time frame where the story. And what's said about the story, no matter how quickly it's leaked or no matter where it shows up, it's an instant gratification for people to jump on it, no matter what the real story is. So, you know, it kind of goes back to everything that we do now is kind of connected to a comment area where you can comment on just about everything that's going on out there. So from a PR professional's point of view, you know, the days of being able to, you know, come up with this great statement and this great release that goes out there and really tells their side of the story before anyone else really has an opinion on it, those days are over. And I think from a PR world, it's almost a little bit of a nightmare in social media because the perceptions that people have out there are usually generated from other people. And, you know, when you, for instance, take the current scandal with Sandra Bullock and all of that, I mean, it's really, right now, it's a little sad because she's off in hiding and, you know, and she really didn't do anything wrong. So, I mean, it's a little backwards for me, but he's out there and he's releasing statements to the media, but he's releasing statements after everybody's already had a perception of what's going on. So it's kind of like, you know, too little too late. I mean, you can't really do something at this point in time that is going to create a buzz and not expect for that buzz to carry on from an individual perception before anybody has any real official statement to release.
Yeah, Jesse just checked in the rehab today. I don't know if you caught that on your feeds, but
I did.
Somebody's steering these people through these channels because that's what's expected by the world. You get caught like this, you mm-hmm. go to the rehab thing, and it's like a car wash. You know, the suicide attempts in Hollywood, all the things that come up, you know, I guess it was Owen Wilson about a year and a half ago, You know, and it's like the when you're dealing with somebody behind the scenes that you know is unstable, that they're especially if you're dealing with a Hollywood type, how do you as a PR person, knowing that this is a runaway train, they're like the Jersey Shore kids, things like that, how do you deal with, you know, the sort of the dark side of all that spotlight, all that attention they get when the world is, you know, like you said, it's a gossip-oriented culture. Everybody's got something to say. How do you kind of guide the conversation to a place where there's going to be some longevity for that person instead of having them just kind of, you know, kind of fizzle out like that?
Well, you know, in my opinion, you know, my background is managing PR for big brands, not necessarily celebrities, but it kind of goes hand in hand with what's happening. And in my opinion, you know, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody goes through some part in their, you know, something that happens within their lifetime that they don't necessarily feel very proud of or don't necessarily want to share with the world. But when you're in that spotlight, it's shared with the world. And from, you know, from someone who has to manage that, I think what celebrities in general don't do enough of is personal connection with their audience. And, you know, when Facebook came about and Twitter came about, and now you have all these celebrities who are on Twitter and who are actually tweeting, you know, and responding to their audience, I mean, that really picked up, I think, for a lot of celebrities, a different kind of audience to them, where there was a more loyal audience, where when things happened that, you know, wasn't necessarily in a good light for that person, it resonated differently for them than if that person hadn't been connected to them on a more personal level in social media. So from a, you know, the first thing I would say from a PR person's perspective is you need to be connecting to your audience from a social media standpoint or from some type of connection that makes them feel like they have a more personal connection to you, because these people, your audience, they are your brand advocates, no matter who you are, no matter how big your brand is. These are the people that are going to spread your message, good or bad. And those negative comments come from people who don't necessarily feel that personal connection with that person. And they continue to keep coming, and they continue to keep coming. Whereas when you have someone who's out there connected socially and who has a great audience, who has a loyal audience, and they reciprocate that information, I mean, they're communicating back, and, you know, they're out there, and they're getting in touch with their, you know, with their fans. Those kind of fans are going to spread a more positive message, no matter how negative that light is. And they don't. No. Celebrities don't do enough of that. They don't do enough of that. And I think a lot of the PR professionals here. They don't want them doing that.
Now, here's a PR nightmare. Okay, the Michael Steele situation the last couple of days with the RNC. You know, with the whole thing with their expense account came out, and they went to, you know, some exotic strip bar in L.A. and you have that spin that has to come out of that, and a couple of people got fired, you know, whatever. And then you look at the train wreck that is Sarah Palin stumping for John McCain, given her, what she wrote about him in his book last year. If you're a PR person for any one of those three individuals, for Sarah, for John McCain, or for Michael Steele, how do you communicate to this, you're talking about talking to your audience, if your audience is all in the quote-unquote Republican Party, and the Republican Party has fractured as much as the Democratic Party, how do you target your message so that you don't, you know, anger one part of the party against the other? Because it seems like there's a lot of internal, you know, sort of fracturing going on, as well as the bipartisan stuff. Because you fly over all that, and you look at the way, you know, the president used social media to get his messages out, and how that somewhat backfired as well. So how do you consistently get your idea internally organized and then moved out into this maelstrom of conversation that we're talking about here and not have it get, you know, the telephone game where people take the little sound bites and snippets and run around with it and still can create a consistent campaign for somebody?
Well, I think that the PR in this stage in the PR game is more reactionary than anything, and there's not – you know, if they had a consistent plan, if these, you know, these brand managers, these PR professionals that are managing these big names had a consistent plan for different types of crises like these, then, you know, there would be less reaction to it. And I think that's what angers people the most is, you know, you got to have a message that's consistent, and you can't only react to the fans and the audience and what they want to hear only because you found out that what they're saying isn't good. Or it's not agreeable between your audience as a whole. But you have to, I mean, you're never going to reach out and touch everybody on the same level when you're so widespread and you have such a massive audience and you have people following you just to say, you know, negative comments about you. I think that's another, you know, perception is not every fan is necessarily a great fan. Some fans, you know, may be out there and like you for some, you know, specific reason, and they may, you know, not like or disagree with some of the other things that you do. So I feel like, you know, in social media was, you know, that's the reason it took off so well, was because it's the good and the bad, and it's not necessarily always, you know, a pretty picture. But when you get people in there that are commenting and you have, you know, one side and another side that are going back and forth with different commentary, ultimately that's going to continue to build that person's name anyway. It's going to continue to build that brand because that story is getting spread no matter what. And if you keep that in the midst of those consumers or those fans that are going back and forth and not necessarily focused completely on the celebrity name, that's extra ammo for them to keep building that name. So,
I take your point here. I'm just saying, if you have that mentality that you are a water fountain or you are kind of a sprinkler and you don't have to worry about every individual blade of grass and every little reaction, how do you self-select to say, you know, again, looking at the way Sarah Palin's marketed herself, okay, with not as much as, of the political, you know, the stuff, but much more about the fact that she's been able to connect to her base within the Republican Party consistently, despite all the things that she does that are completely, to me, just, you know, absolutely backwards. But for some reason, her image never seems to be tarnished very long, even though she's very inconsistent. The writing on the hand thing, she spun that. How do you get somebody, when you size somebody up as a client or even someone as a brand, if you're dealing with a drug company that's dealing with some fallout, things like that, how do you take the defensive posture or the reactive posture, like you're saying, as your default setting, and then you have to kind of, from playing good defense, you get to play a little bit of offense, or do you have to just constantly say to yourself, we just got to find where the daylight is and run to it? Because it just seems like these windows of opportunity to get your message out on these different mediums is very fleeting.
Yeah, and I completely disagree with them running out and only looking for the positive in everything. You know, I think the reason that Sarah Palin and what she's got out there, even though she's, you know, misconstrued a lot of things and she's not necessarily on her story all the time, she's kind of, you know, mixed bag. But I think because she came out of the gate initially as this real person who had a, you know, who was always going to be had that real connection with her audience, I think that carried along with her, and I think it's benefited her through all of this. I will say that. I will say that I think she's, you know, she impacted a lot of people with that real factor, and I don't think that that's completely run out yet. But you know what? Eventually that will run out, and people will start seeing through the grass, and will continue to see some of the things that she's doing is not necessarily jiving, and then she'll lose a lot of followers that way.
No, how do you look at that whole conversation? Because I keep interrupting because we're not in the same room. how do you size up someone like, you know, when you put the groundswell, or we want to call it the grassroots connection that Glenn Beck has made, as opposed to the sort of the visceral reaction people have to a Rush Limbaugh? All these personalities have been able to create sort of a media empire of themselves. And then you get a guy like Sean Hannity who gets his pins taken out this week, because there's always somebody who's going to, you know, kind of aim for the scandal on them. And they, some of them seem to write it out, and some of them seem to be able to, you know, get wounded by these things and not recover. Limbaugh is an exception. He's like a cockroach. I don't know how you get rid of that guy. But it just seems like, yeah, it's true. I mean, everything the guy does, it's like, how does he come back from this? Or, you know, someone who's had to rehabilitate their image, like a Don Imus or somebody. These media personalities seem to have some internal mechanism that's able to sort of itsy-bitsy spider their way back up. Is it because of the fact that the public is the news cycles are so quick and we just get bored and we go on to the next thing? We sort of just get a little bit of amnesia. You know, Steve Phillips had that recent controversy with he had one affair instead of like 20, so he's like, you know, basically just a lightweight in this whole thing, and he's now getting himself back into talking baseball on the radio. What is it about that resurrection mentality, I guess? Because you make the apology, you go to rehab, and it's like a Monopoly game. You just go and come back around again. Jay Leno just stabbed everybody in the back, and everybody just went right back to watching The Tonight Show. What is it about the culture?
You know, I really do feel like, you know, we're hit with so many things every day, something new. and I really do feel like it almost kind of one, you know, we can only hold so much of all this, you know, scandal, gossip, juicy detail, you know, aside from everything else we have in our daily lives. We can only hold on to that for so long, and I feel like we kind of have to, you know, the cycle kind of continues in our heads of what's going on, and one thing almost kind of comes in and replaces another. But I really feel like a lot of times, you know, how this blows over for the celebrities and the big names that really, you know, cycle through this pretty quickly is they don't necessarily go on the offensive right away. I feel like that's where a lot of brands really, they really don't do a great job of combating comments and scandals and things that are released to the media by going on the offensive, because it just sparks a whole other situation, a whole other fire ignites when that happens. So
I just want to hear, give me an example from some of your experience about how you've had to internally calm down a client and resist the temptation to put foot in mouth and be more composed when faced with some of that type of social pressure to kind of react to a controversy.
Well, I have to tell you, so one of the things that we blogged about, that the agency, Jennifer Barbie Inc., blogged about not too long ago, was what to do when you're in that fire mode stage, which is really looking at, you know, when somebody's commented something on your fan page and you're, you know, you're a big name, you're a big brand, you don't necessarily agree with it, but you got to take a step back for a minute and really, really don't react so quickly to what's happening out there, because some of those people that put that stuff out there, they're only looking for a reaction. And it's not necessarily what everybody else wants to hear about anyway. It's just a reaction for that one specific group of people that they want to get out of you. So you got to take a step back for a minute. And the other part of that is you have a plan in place where if something comes about that is going to have a negative light on your brand or on your name, you need to have something set in place so that your PR professionals, your web marketing team, your ad agency, everybody that's part of representing you to the public has a communication plan set in place that says, hey, you don't respond, we respond. Here's when you get to step in. When we've calmed the fires a little bit, then you can get in, and then you can have that reactionary, you know, commentary from a personal perspective, because initially when you're talking about some of these big names, the first thing they want is go on the offensive, and that's when everything falls apart. And that's just what people, that's how we're built. We're built to go on the, when our feelings are hurt or we're offended in some way, someone said something bad that we don't necessarily agree with, to go on the offensive. And that's where people really fall out.
Well, why don't you handicap a couple things for me here as we go forward here a little bit with Rachel Cruz. Baseball season starting next week. Yeah, we had two spring training incidents here in New York, one with the Mets, one with the Yankees. How do you, from a PR perspective, playing complete critic here, how do you feel the Mets handled the whole Jose Reyes thyroid thing when you had the doctor saying one thing, the general manager saying something else, the owner coming in, the player said something else to the Spanish ESPN channel, as opposed to A-Rod, who's embroiled in this thing with his Canadian doctor and the HGH and has been taking the approach of you know, speak no evil. He's not saying anything to the press, and it's just kind of, you know, like a pressure cooker. What is, if you, if this is like to your point of no one to hold them, no one to fold them. Is it something that you could say to the talent or to the brand of A-Rod, you know, or the brand of Jose Reyes, it's not in your best interest to speak now. The battle plan has to be much, much more, you know, have a little integrity to it. Is it about having a clear vision among the parties? Because it seems like when it doesn't, everyone just starts spouting off their hand on the elephant, so to speak, and the public gets, you know, basically confused, and then they get bitter about it, and they react to the focus of the situation. They react to the team in the Mets case, and with A-Rod, they react to the wall that's around him, his entourage around him. So how do you, from handicapping, from a PR standpoint, using social media, using all the tools, all the resources you have at your disposal, how do you handicap how the Mets handled the Reyes thing and how the Yankees are handling, or A-Rod himself is handling this kind of?
Well, you know, I think the miscommunication, I think, you know, that's just a big mess. That goes right back to, you know, my point about having a communication plan set in place before something happens, not necessarily when something happens, but having a communication plan, because when you go out there and you're spouting off different comments and different stories and different points, and then they don't jive, then you completely, you can't go back on that. You can't take those comments back. You can't
right.
fall backwards. What you can do, if you have a communication plan put together, then you're able to come together as a group, and you're able to define exactly what you're going to release and how you're going to release it and how you're going to make amends with, you know, what's been put out there. But you're able to do that in a consistent manner, even if it may be a few hours after or whatever that may be. That's still much less impact than all those inconsistent messages and stories out there. And now it just looks like it's a big pile of lies. Nobody's gonna want to, you know, put their name on that or talk to that or have any, you know, anything good to say about it, because whose story are they going to be commenting on? You know, so I just, that completely goes back to, you know, having a consistent communication plan. You know, I don't care how many, you know, your PR person shouldn't be the only person looking at your messages. It should be everyone involved in your personal brand, no matter whether it's online, in the print, in the media, wherever that is, needs to be a consistent message.
The goal, and again, this is something that educated me here, because, you know, try and market semantics. What's a soma? That's all I ever hear. So it's like, you know, are you really in the role as a PR person of trying to tell a story to the audience that wants to hear it, or are you trying to sell a story to someone who needs to hear it, or both?
Well, I feel like it could be both in some cases. You know, I feel like, you know, depending on what the story is, it really depends on the audience. And how that brand, you know, is laid out, and how that, you know, how that's reactionary to the audience itself. I mean, there are so many different stories out there, and so many different ways to react to them. I don't feel like coming out there and telling the story to tell a story is really the way to go. I do feel like coming out there as a PR professional and telling the right kind of story to the right kind of audience should be, you know, the focal point, you know, first and foremost. Because everybody's got a different audience. Everybody wants to hear a different story, you know, depending upon what they like or don't like about what you've got going on. But coming out there to push a story, just to push it, I mean, I just, what really baffles me is the amount of scandals and reports and stories that are out there just because the person needed news, you know, media coverage this week. Or, you know, they have a show coming out or a movie coming out, and they just, you know, they need to, you know, pull in some money to it. So I really feel like telling the real story needs to happen.
Yeah, and that's the difference between having an authentic thing to share and having a synthetic
mm-hmm.
thing that you're slipping out there. And the difference between engaging the audience and actually sort of attacking and interrupting the rhythm of people with controversy, because you can always get attention, you know, throwing the proverbial Molotov cocktail into the room. And then what happens after? If you consistently have that mentality, then people learn it's like cry wolf. They ignore you. So I guess, you know, kind of like just to give people an idea of how fast and easy it is to connect, why don't you give me the backstory of how you ended up following me on Twitter? I'm fascinated how anyone finds me on Twitter.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Blog Talk Radio. You know, I'm anything blog and social media related. I mean, I'm just a big, that's what I do. All day long, I just read. I read, and I'm in it. That's what I do. So yeah, I mean, from a social media standpoint, you know, that's kind of how I connected to you in particular. And, you know, I feel like telling the real story, I feel like, you know, shows like this, radio shows like this, it's important to get out there kind of, you know, real commentary from a real perspective. And, you know, right now the PR is just, it's so reactionary, and it's such a media mess for so many brands out there. I mean, I don't know if you heard what happened with Nestle last week, but major issue with them on Facebook, and someone from their, you know, their company posted something about the proper way to use their logo for their fans. I guess fans were using their logo, and whoever manages their page came on and said, you know, I am, you know, we really, you know, appreciate you guys using the logo, and we really want you to do that, but we want you to use it the right way. You know, make sure you use this version of the logo with this particular, you know, icon on it. And somebody commented back that, you know, thanks, but just, you know, be, and I'm paraphrasing here, but just, you know, be glad that we're actually spreading that around, because as a brand, that's something that you should be very proud of. Well, that just set off this guy on the offensive, and I don't know who manages it, a woman or a man, but it just set them off, and they just made these explosive offensive comments about how it's, the, you know, their page, their rules, their brand, they'll say what needs to happen, and then it just firestorm. Of media, and within 10 hours, they lost thousands of fans. You know, thousands of comments were posted. It was spread all over the news media, all over social media, bookmarking sites. It was everywhere. So
again, that happened in a tiny part of cyberspace that spreads all over the globe. But someone who's in that storm, it's like being in a hurricane somewhere, you know, and you, mm-hmm. you have to have a way to kind of anti-em your way out of that thing, and recover. And some companies can handle that over and over again. Some just have one, and it's like the balloon pops, and they're all over the room, and they're done. So again, being a PR person and being someone who's kind of been raised in this era of, you know, when you got started, it was a whole different environment, and now, you know, YouTube came in, which made everything stick. Nothing stays in Vegas anymore. It stays in YouTube. And now this sort of social economic environment where messages have value, not so much what's in the message, but just where the message is placed, because it's going to spread. I didn't know Blog Talk Radio could attract someone with your talent to my dopey Twitter page, because I just go over there and complain about stuff. But here you go. So it's like,
I feel like sometimes now with the whole Twitter craze, you know, people are out there just to get fans or just to get followers and just to, you know, and, you know, when I ran across you, you know, I felt like a real more authentic person was trying to spread this message out there. You know, if I'm being honest, that's kind of what I felt. So definitely I'm more attracted to that at this point, because I am interested in the real authentic story. And I am interested in you know, conversing with people who have, you know, real comments about what's going on in the PR world and aren't out there to, you know, promote their business or promote their brand or promote their name, and that's the only real story they have to tell. I mean, right now social media has taken over what's happening in PR.
It's a personal branding mentality. Yeah, I've had a couple of guests like Gary Vee, Vaynerchuk, who's all over the damn web and all over the TV, and about this personal branding, where we've uploaded this corporate mentality down to the individual and said you have to constantly be selling yourself. And to me, that just smacks of, like, you know, blue-green algae and Amway and multi-level marketing. And it sort of strips the individual of their personal, you know, a message. And it makes you much more of just this, like, you know, chatty Cathy that just keeps saying, look at me. And I just turn off when I see that. And I never read the messages, and, you know, it doesn't resonate with me. So maybe that's it. Maybe I have something real to say. If I was sitting talking with you in a bar or sitting talking to you anywhere at a party, it's the same as I do on the social media. It's just like the telephone. It's just another way to have a conversation. I don't understand why it has to constantly be about trying to hook and reel people in and have the tuna nets out. But, you know, that's what most people seem to be taking these things for. And that's why I think sometimes the message for the message sake, you know, sort of takes the precedent over the true messages, and you have to sort of get all that, you know, sort of cyber parsley off the plate, and what you're left with sometimes is a very small salad, but that's what you're left with. But all right, well, I guess wrapping it up.
Part of the salad.
hopefully I'm at least a cherry tomato in the salad bar there. So, all right, well, wrapping it up here. What's the number one misconception about PR that you want to clear up, because people have a very jaded view of PR? That you'd like to clear up for the audience now as we wind it down?
Well, misconception. You know, not every story is a true story, I guess, is the biggest misconception. People tend to jump on things quicker than ever before, and they're quick to spread a message even before they realize even what that whole message is. So, you know, but that's going to continue to happen. It's going to continue to happen no matter what. Those bits and pieces are just going to continue to get spread. No matter whether it's true or not true. And then, you know, I think that's the biggest misconception I can think of right now.
Well, as we say in Soma land, the truth is a gypsy and the truth is light.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to move, and it should move with you, not through you. And you definitely exemplify that. You're one of the people that I've spotted here in the last, you know, 36 hours, I guess, that and I went through a whole bunch of PR searches, and I said, oh, my God, someone friended me that's a PR person. Let's see what happens here. So I said, you know, it has that, there's a human quality, I think, that's been lost to PR that, you know, again, truth versus story versus fiction is really, and you have to have a very selective and very attuned mind to be able to make those distinctions, and you definitely have that going for you. So thanks for contributing tonight, and you guys listening, keep listening to more Soma Time, and Kristen, hang on for a sec, and we'll be back, and take care, and we will go back and review this after she comes through the plane, because we have other things to do. So hang on one sec. All right. So there's Kristen Cruz. And again, if you wanted to get a look at her site, it's she's located here at JenniferBarbee.com. It's BARBEE.com/Kristen.
as the WAV file finishes itself there. And catch her also on Twitter. Come on, will you? You can catch her also on Twitter at Kristen Cruz. Well, that's signed Kristen Cruz, and you'll find her there tweeting away. And unfortunately, Kristen was traveling back from North Carolina, got delayed on the way back, and she just using social media, actually the old school email, just told me she got snagged over there, and she's going to be unable to join us here at the back end of the show. We wanted to kind of complete the circle, do a little Phil Collins, you know, kind of both sides of the Atlantic thing, you know, to get her on both as pre-recorded and live on the same show. But maybe she'll be back. I don't know. She's got a lot to say. And, you know, I just want to get your, you know, if you guys have any reactions to that as we wrap up, we got a couple more news stories here. Again, the phone lines are open, 646-478-4847, 646-478-4847. But now, while we fill in some time here, trying to wrap up some of these stories we didn't get to before because we got off on a rant there with Professor Val before. Back to Sarah. Sister Sarah, well, she's been busy. First of all, she had two tweets this afternoon in reaction to the drilling story. Of course, the one was predictable, which was Drill Baby Drill. That came in around 7 hours ago. And then right after that, because Republican, the kind of the big redhead-faced guy, red-faced angry guy, Bomer there, I think he's from Illinois, I forget where he's from, came out against this this drilling thing. Looking at it as another one of the anything Obama says, this guy freaks out. He's just, you know, he's the one that goes, hell no, you didn't. That guy, love him. It's just a constant source. See, when someone's consistently doing that kind of stuff, you just can't not look away. You kind of tune into the guy because it's just so train wreck fun to watch. Anyway, Sarah, the ever the spinning meister she is. First she says, drill baby drill, agreeing with Obama. Then seconds later, says Republican Boehner, yeah, B-O-E-H-N-E-R, you guys pronounce it, is spot on. Obama goal is to cram through job-killing, energy-depleting, burdensome cap-and-tax scheme on heels of Obama's new pro-drilling message. So basically, don't believe what Obama's doing. His big strategy is cap-and-trade. And we may, between now and the 19th, when they march the open gun thing on the Potomac there, on the 15th this month, they're having something, I think, with the Tea Party people for Tax Day. So definitely somewhere between the 15th and the 19th, we're going to do a special show with our pal NSM Doc from Freedomizer Radio to sort of kind of sift through and comb out a lot of the, you know, sort of the frosting and a lot of the, you know, stuff that kind of blocks the view of the truth here when it comes to what is really going down. From Washington on out, because you know, as you know, my point of view about a lot of this stuff is from a standpoint of having people regain their first person authority. And every time I see these kinds of sort of end runs to take away freedoms, I get a little upset. Back to Sarah, scary Sarah. She's got that new show on Fox News debuting tomorrow, April Fool's Day, Tally Day in Scotland, and so she's making this debut. Tomorrow night on Fox, and there's a little bit of a snag here because she does some of these interviews. It's called Real American Stories. It's supposed to chronicle people who have overcome adversity, you know. So she has these guests on. It's so funny. And, you know, it's been probably kicked around, as you might have heard about it. Country music star Toby Keith, GM chairman Jack Welch, Congressional Medal of Honor winner, and Not Jack Wells, but somebody else. And LL Cool J were included. But, as has been discovered, she never interviewed him. They're actually running an interview that happened a year ago, and she made comments about it. So it's just strange. Because the Tea Partiers were sort of, like, puffing their chests out, and one of them tweeted about, it's shocked to find the alleged grand dragon of the Tea Party movement is making chit-chat with a hip-hop legend. Well, actually, she wasn't. LL Cool J, star of NCIS Los Angeles, tweeted Tuesday night, Fox lifted an old interview I gave in 2008 to someone else and are misrepresenting the public in order to promote Sarah Palin's show. Hello! Don't mess with LL. Going back to Cali, right? So the, when contacted by Yahoo News, a Fox spokesman explained that LL Cool J had been informed in 2008. The interview was planned as a segment for Real American Stories, though of course the network couldn't have known at that time Palin would be hosting. Real American Stories features uplifting tales about overcoming adversity. We believe Mr. Smith's interview fit that criteria. As it happens, Mr. Smith does not want to be part of... Mr. Smith is actually all Cool J's real name. Mr. Smith. With a program that could serve as an inspiration for others, we are cutting his interview and wish him the best in his fledgling acting career. Fledgling? I take offense at the fledgling. Attempts to reach Mr. Cool, LL Cool J, were proved unsuccessful. Perhaps he intends a more recent Twitter entry to serve as his rejoinder. Nobody can bring you peace but yourself, is what he said. Meanwhile, Toby Keith, so the K there, said that he never had done an interview with these people and has no idea why he's being used in the special. He believes that Fox is recycling the interview he did with Fox in 2009. There you go. So Fox knows he's at it again. And Sister Sarah right in the middle of it, as she always will be. Amazing. You see these two tweets seconds apart. 1 minute she's drill baby drill, the next minute don't believe a word he's saying. And people don't, like I was saying in the interview with Kristen, how does that, she's just so confusing. She's a messy Mr. Schmidt. You know, I think we need to just sum all that up with a phrase from the eco lexicon.
Boozy, boozy, bop, city bop.
That's it. So, to close up the show here a little early, because I don't see anyone calling, and we've got some air to fill here, the news from science is kind of goofy, actually. Here, I'm going to spit it out. To scientists, laughter is no joke, it's serious, okay? So a scientist walks into a shopping mall to watch people laugh. This is not a joke, guys. The laughter is a serious scientific subject, one that researchers are trying to figure out. Laughter is primal, our first way of communicating. Apes laugh, so do dogs and rats. Babies laugh long before they can speak. No one teaches you how to laugh, you just do. And often you often laugh involuntarily in a specific rhythm in certain spots in a conversation. Okay? 10 to 15% of laughter is over someone else making a joke, neuroscientist Robert Provine says. He studied laughter for decades. Laughter is mostly about social responses rather than a reaction to a joke. Laughter is, above all else, a social thing. The requirement for laughter is another person. Interesting. I laugh to myself all the time. Over the years, we've boiled laughter down to its basics. All language groups laugh, ha, 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 basically the same way. Whether you speak Mandarin, French, or English, everyone understands laughter. There's a pattern generator in our brain that produces this sound. It gets a little funky, doesn't it? Each ha is about 1/15 of a second, repeated every fifth of a second. Laugh faster or slower than that, and it sounds more like panting or something else. Deaf people laugh without hearing, and people on cell phones laugh without seeing, illustrating that laughter isn't dependent on a single sense, but on social interactions. And that's from the book Laughter, A Scientific Investigation. It's joy. It's positive engagement with life. It's deeply social. All right? Now, there's more. But wait, there's more. There's more? Well, of course there's more. And it's not just a people thing. Chimps. Can't even read. Chimps tickle each other. Who needs another person? Isn't he mean a piece of paper? I can laugh. And even laugh when another chimp pretends to tickle them. That's my candidate for the most ancient joke. It's a feigned tickle. Primal humor. This is this Provine guy. Pancept studies rats that laugh when he tickles them. Who the hell is tickling a rat? It's on YouTube, folks. And a funny pairing of proofs you could think about. Turns out rats love to be tickled. Who knew? Some Republicans, I guess, got into the study. crashing everybody tonight. They return again and again to the hands of researchers tickling them. So that guy's name is Panksepp. Go to YouTube and check out the tickling rat guy. By studying rats, and this guy and other scientists could figure out what's going on in the brain during laughter, it holds promise for human ills. Northwestern University biomedical engineering professor Jeffrey Borghoff has found that laughter in rats produces an insulin-like growth factor chemical that acts like an antidepressant and anxiety reducer. He thinks the same thing is probably happening in humans. This would give doctors a new chemical target in the brain, oh my God, in their effort to develop drugs that fight depression and anxiety. You need a drug to replace laughter. This is what, they get this great information. I'm happy with the article. Then it's all about developing a new drug. Rat bastards. Maybe they should tickle them. Tickle the drug guys. Even so, laughter, so this is a visual there, hasn't been proven to be the best medicine. Margaret Struber, psychiatry professor, University of California, LA, she found that distraction and mood improvement helps, but cannot find a benefit for laughter alone. Something tells me we might have an exo in our hands. No study has shown that laughter produces a direct health benefit, largely because it's hard to separate laughter from just good feelings. This is back to Provine. But he thinks it doesn't really matter. It isn't the fact laughter feels good when you do it. Isn't that enough? I'm not sounding like a scientist there, but I'm with him. While studying laughter is serious work, it apparently sounds like a silly topic when seeking research grants. For that reason, Northwestern's Bergdorf avoids the word laughter. He calls it positive emotional response. That's not the tickle rat guy. No, that's the other guy. There's no funding in fun research. So there you go. It's amazing how scientists can take something so dirt obvious to everybody else and make it into this this big riddle. Even though you're only make-believing laugh clown. I mean, come on. What are we talking here? So anyway, I'm just looking around here if there's anything else I had to get to, because there was so much. There were so many damn stories here this week. You know, I could take a little look here at the Hollywood stuff, because Jesse James going into rehab, not really news to me or news to you. But it is following that PR theme of doing basically what everybody expects you to do when you're under the influence, so to speak. And this just in, Ricky Martin comes out. He's a fortunate homosexual man. There you go. We can all sleep better now. There's a lot of stuff. So many things. Michael Steele's thing. I don't know. I kind of get sick of these stories. I guess I'll give Bill Maher a little plug here, because I love his show, and this is a clip from the New Rules segment last week, and I needed to hear it. It's 20 seconds or so, and then we'll wrap up the shop here for tonight.
New Rules, stop hitting on women at the dog park. Yes, we're talking to you, divorced guy with a ponytail. That better be a milk bone in your pocket, because we're not glad to see you. Women can you stay for every show? Women come to the park to exercise their dogs, not to socialize with hounds. They wouldn't pick you up if they had a plastic bag on their hands. Although if you're determined to meet a woman at the dog park, here's a tip. Get a dog.
All right, there you go. Not hilarious, but maybe if you're out there listening, you can enjoy some little scientific laughter with that. So let's see. I think I'll kind of end where I began here as far as the music list goes. Now, next week, we got so many things on the plate. I don't even know where to start. I don't know who the guests are going to be. We got to get people on the safe line. We got all kinds of things. We got the aftermath of the Tiger's speech on Monday after the master starts next Thursday, but next Monday he's going to be speaking at 5:00. So we'll have the aftermath of that. We'll have the any fallout from opening day in baseball. Listen to this. I think we're going some other direction there, aren't we? I was going to take a nice Allman Brothers song, and I ended up playing that one. How about this one? This is a nice little ditty. Kind of play us out here today. So we'll have that. We'll definitely have some stuff on, like I said, on opening day, and just everything. There's so many layers here. Where we're going to go next with this show as we get further into the spring. So you know, I'm just going to leave it there, and we will be guided by the light, as it were. All right. So thanks to our guests, Professor Val and Kristen Cruz, and you guys listen back again. If you want to get a hold of me? Pretty simple. Email is going to be. NakedSoma@gmail.com, website somaspace.org. Thank you very much for hanging out with here in summertime. See you again next Wednesday night, 9 sharp. Till then, travel light through the darkness. Happy Easter, Catholics. Spiral on, sapiens.